This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm your host, Mac Pritchard. I'm also the founder of MaxList. It's a job board of the Pacific Northwest that helps you find a fulfilling career. One of the best ways to get good at job hunting is to talk to people who do it well. That's why once a month, I interview a MaxList reader who found a job they love. Our guest today is Steph Roth. She's the Strategic Communications Manager at the Sightline Institute. It's an independent, nonprofit research center in Seattle, Washington. Steph Roth believes in the power of working for herself, her community, and her values. She also understands how hard it can be to look for work. In a story you can find on the MaxList website, Steph says that finding jobs that match her values has been central to her career. And she encourages all job seekers to remember what it's like to be an applicant the next time you serve on a hiring committee. Steph, why do you love your job?
I think the thing that I love most about it, it's like I'm getting paid to be myself. And I get to show up every day with people who are passionate about finding policies that advance a more sustainable, affordable, just world, and who also care a lot about each other.
And tell us briefly about the work of the Sightline Institute.
Sure. The Sightline Institute is based in Seattle, but we research and advance policies throughout the Pacific Northwest and with the Pacific Northwest as a model to ensure that that it is a livable future for everyone. So climate justice, affordable, abundant housing, a robust, inclusive democracy are just a few aspects of our policy work that we're committed to.
Well, let's talk about your job search, Steph. Now, what attracted you to this position at the Sightline Institute?
I felt like every moment of my existence had brought me to that door. I mean, it sounds lofty to say, but you know that they work on all of the policies that I care about. I was former executive director of Oregon Walks, and they have worked on both transportation and walkable urban environment, including abundant, affordable housing. I worked a lot on an inclusive democracy, you know, and have been in my volunteer and my professional life for the last 25 years, and they're working on the same thing, how to create an inclusive democracy. And also I'm an aunt. I have a niece and nephew who both live in the region, and that's the role that I care the most about, and the idea of advancing policy that that ensures, not to put too fine a point on it, that they don't inherit a fiery hellscape is meaningful to me as an aunt. And so when they had a strategic communications manager position come up, I was just like, yes, I have done a lot of communications and I've done community organizing. Please put me in, coach.
And you made that same point about in your article, and you brought it up again a moment ago, how when you saw the posting, you thought, everything I've done in my career has prepared me for this position. It's got to be so gratifying to find a job like that. And I've also talked to other candidates over the years who've told me that had that situation, same reaction when seeing a posting. What did you do, Steph, to show the hiring manager that in fact your career had prepared you for this and you were the right candidate?
Oh, that's a fantastic question, because like a lot of people, I'm in my mid-40s. I've had a lot of different jobs, and my career, you know, there's a lot of things that I could say that I don't have. And I think that, you know, as when we come into a job search, one thing that I am sometimes susceptible to is coming at like this scarcity concept of like, what am I not? What do I need to have that I don't yet have? Rather than what is the abundance? What do I have? How am I a fit? And then how do I explain that to the people who I want to be my future coworkers? And so, for example, they are a policy think tank. I was an opera performance and theater double major. Like, it's not obvious, but through a lot of my jobs, I can piece together, I can look at what are the things, what are the aspects of each of my previous work experiences that were most valuable to me. And when I piece those together, it points directly to the type of job that I want. And I knew that that being a strategic communication manager at Sightline was that.
Any tips about how to demonstrate that the skills you acquired in one field, in your story, example for the arts, for example, translate into work at a policy think tank? Because again, many job seekers will say, well, I've got the skills, they're just not in that world. What worked for you when you were showing the managers at Sightline that your skills were indeed transferable and made you the best candidate for the job?
I think, first of all, as someone who is a theater major, I look at a cover letter, and I think that this is a storytelling document, right? Like, the resume tells you where you have been, like, that's the chronology. Those are the details. But the cover letter is really what develops the narrative around what are the skills, who is the person that you are bringing to this space, to this opportunity. And so looking at what a job position, a description entails, like what are the things that they're looking for, not just the skills or experiences, but what are also the attributes, and how, you know, taking that, what is thinking of that almost as a story prompt of, you know, what in my life creates a nexus for this position. And for example, I said that I, you know, majored in opera performance. That doesn't seem like it's directly conducive to a policy think tank or to, you know, advocacy work in a different, with a different hat. I'm on the Planning and Sustainability Commission for the City of Portland. But what opera performance did teach me was I majored in breathing, and I majored in empathy and putting myself in other people's shoes. And so those aspects of my previous work are directly related to patience and empathy and problem solving.
One thing that was striking to me when reading your article, Steph, is that you talk candidly about applying for several dozen jobs during your search and not getting a single offer until your current position. And that had to be so hard. How did you handle that rejection?
Oh, that's that is a great question. Sometimes not well. But, you know, as we were talking before this, you know, taking a moment to feel grief, I think, is an important part. That, you know, when you apply for a job, like, I'll just say, when I applied for each of those jobs, I'd have, you know, put myself, embodied that position, and I'm kind of mentally moved into that job as what my life was going to look like. And so in most of those, I ended up being, you know, a runner-up candidate. And so, you know, you go through the cover letter, multiple interviews, and then the grief of that rejection is significant. And so, one, just allowing yourself to recognize that as grief and being able to sit with it, and that it's okay to feel really bad about it. and to recognize that anger is a part of it, loss is a part of it, bargaining is a part, you know, all of these stages of grief do coalesce in part of a job experience. And then, you know, when you get beyond that, what is the opportunity? You know, what did you learn in that time? And oftentimes, if you've gone through at least one interview, you've met people, and you've met people in a sector, in a type of work that really interests you. So what could a next step be? And so part of that is, you know, how can a rejection move into building your network? And so sometimes, like, I'll ask for an informational interview, and sometimes people grant it, sometimes people cannot for policy reasons or for time reasons. But when they can, it's been a powerful experience and has helped me be a better candidate and a better professional going forward.
As you went through those interviews and application processes, what lessons did you learn along the way that you applied to future applications, especially lessons that might have been helpful to getting the job you have today?
I think a big one, gosh, you ask good questions, Mac. Oh, such good. You should have a podcast. I think a big one is, and I'll say a particular for women, that there is an expectation of humility, that we have, humility is a part of definitely who I am. And I think that is at least to some extent gendered. So to get beyond that and to feel comfortable owning work, because no one does any work by themselves, right? We all do work in teams. I mean, even I was this sole staff person for an advocacy organization, and yet I couldn't bring myself to say what I did. I could only say what we did together. And so to feel comfortable packaging your own accomplishments in a way that feels true, that is true, that is not a lie, while also recognizing the team's effort was, I think, my biggest barrier, because I don't like to ever say that what I accomplished, because it does feel like a lie. You know, I actually in interviews at the beginning of it, I would say, like, I would actually offer a caveat at the beginning of an interview. It's like, you might ask me a bunch of questions about, I will say what role I played. I am also here because I am here for this job within this professional community because I believe in working in a team. And so I will talk about what my role in a team effort is. But I also want to be conscious about, you know, where the sea begins and the sand ends in terms of these accomplishments. And that at least helps me be able to say without caveat for the rest of the interview what, quote unquote, I did as part of previous jobs. So it was less for them and it was more for me.
Well, you know, often when someone applies for a job, they are reluctant to reach out to people inside the organization. And even if they know someone, or if they do reach out, they're uncertain about what to ask for as they get ready for an interview. And in your article for us on the website, you know, you talked about how you contacted people sightline and talked to them before the interview, and that helped you get ready for your conversation with the hiring team. Can you talk about how you did that and how you approached people and what you asked for in those conversations?
One, I had someone that I had known for over a decade who I just adore, who was then working at Sightline. And actually, one of the questions I wanted to ask was, you know, I know Sightline's work. I value it. I admire it. And also, I want to make absolutely sure that it connects with my values. And so it was like, what are all of the tough questions that I can't ask in an interview, but that would define whether I would want to spend the time on an interview and on a job search. So I felt pretty comfortable asking them, but then I also asked other folks who were, you know, regular donors who I knew had conversations. I felt so strongly about this particular job that I was willing to, call in my entire community and have conversations with people who interacted with the organization and be very open and clear that this was the job that I wanted and that I wanted them to be part of that success story.
And when you reached out to people outside the organization who were colleagues or friends, and you asked them to contact the employer on your behalf, what did you ask them to do? Was it to just say Steph's a good egg, or you should hire her, or what was the ask?
That's a great question. You know, oftentimes I didn't know that I had an ask at the beginning of that of the conversation. It was more like, what can I do? Like I asked a friend who I knew had some relationship with the executive director, but I was mostly asking, it's like, what do you think that I'm a good fit for this? And you know, what might set me apart? What do you think that they're looking for? And then she was like, well, I know Alan. I could just talk, you know, why don't I just send an email like saying, like, we're talking right now and you are actually interested. And I was like, well, that would be great. I think it's kind of in some ways, at least for me, it almost felt like asking people for advice helped them feel like they were a part of this story. And then oftentimes they would suggest ways that they could help. And they weren't always ways that I even knew that they could offer help. And that's where going back to humility, I think that's where humility does show up in a good way, that you can be like, hey, I don't know what I'm best about in this role. Like, how do you see me? And they're like, oh, I think you're great. Let me just tell everyone. And I was like, oh, that would be neat. Yes, if you could do that, I will say yes to that.
What difference do you think this preparation and these conversations made once you became a finalist for the job?
I think at that point I had felt oftentimes in, especially a final interview, you're going in with, like, there's you and there is a panel of other people who are all looking at you. And having had a number of those conversations in advance of that interview, I felt like I was coming in with a community, that it was not just me on the other side of that table. It was me and Shelley Romero, who you had interviewed before from Rose City Chica. It was, you know, friends who work at Sightline and friends who have been committed to that organization in other ways. So I felt less alone. I felt more confident. And I felt prepared.
Well, it's been a great conversation, Steph. What's your number one job hunting tip?
Get therapy if you possibly can, with the caveat that our current healthcare system definitely could use a rewrite. But as we were talking earlier, the job search can bring up a lot. It can bring up grief. It can bring up elation and hope, and rejection shows up in a lot of different ways throughout our lives. And so, if you can get therapy right before a job search, is a great time to do it.
Well, thanks for sharing your story, Steph. To learn more about Steph Roth's job search, visit maxlist.org/stories. And check out the MaxList website for dozens of other success stories. On the second Friday of every month, we add a new interview with a MaxList reader who found a dream job. Go to maxlist.org/stories. In the meantime, thank you for listening to today's bonus episode of Find Your Dream Job. The show was produced by MaxList. Susan Thornton Huff schedules our guests and writes our newsletter. Lisa Kislinberry Anderson manages our social media. Our sound engineer is Will Watts. Ryan Morrison at Podfly Productions edits the show. Dawn Mole creates our transcripts, and our music is by Freddie Trujillo. This is Mac Pritchard. See you next month.